We're going to read together from Isaiah chapter 26. Isaiah 26, begin to read at verse 1. In that day, this song will be sung in the land of Judah. We have a strong city. God makes salvation its walls and ramparts. Open the gates that the righteous nation may enter, the nation that keeps faith. You will keep in perfect peace him whose mind is steadfast because he trusts in you. Trust in the Lord forever, for the Lord is the rock eternal. He humbles those who dwell on high. He lays the lofty city low. He levels it to the ground and casts it down to the dust. Feet trample it down, the feet of the oppressed, the footsteps of the poor. The path of the righteous is level. O upright one, you make the way of the righteous smooth. Yes, Lord, walking in the way of your laws, we wait for you. Your name and renown are the desire of our hearts. My soul yearns for you in the night. In the morning, my spirit longs for you. When your judgments come upon the earth, the people of the world learn righteousness. Though grace is shown to the wicked, they do not learn righteousness. Even in a land of uprightness, they go on doing evil and regard not the majesty of the Lord. O Lord, your hand is lifted high, but they do not see it. Let them see your zeal for your people and be put to shame. Let the fire reserved for your enemies consume them. Lord, you establish peace for us. All that we have accomplished, you have done for us. O Lord our God, other lords beside you have ruled over us, but your name alone do we honour. They are now dead, they live no more. Those departed spirits do not rise. You punished them and brought them to ruin. You wiped out all memory of them. You have enlarged the nation, O Lord. You have enlarged the nation. You have gained glory for yourself. You have extended all the borders of the land. Lord, they came to you in their distress. When you disciplined them, they could barely whisper a prayer. As a woman with child and about to give birth writhes and cries out in her pain, so were we in your presence, O Lord. We were with child, we writhed in pain, but we gave birth to wind. We have not brought salvation to the earth. We have not given birth to a people of the world. But your dead will live. Their bodies will rise. You who dwell in the dust, wake up and shout for joy. Your dew is like the dew of the morning. The earth will give birth to her dead. Go, my people, enter your rooms and shut the doors behind you. Hide yourselves for a little while until his wrath has passed by. See, the Lord is coming out of his dwelling to punish the people of the earth for their sins. The earth will disclose the blood shed upon her. She will conceal her slain no longer. Amen. May God bless to us the public reading of his word. We live in a world where security is a money-making business. Millions and millions must be spent in the UK alone on all sorts of different security devices. I mean, show of hands, how many people have a burglar alarm? Yeah, there's a few, yeah, most people, probably over three quarters of people have a security system for their house. Also, we have security systems on the car, including immobilizers. But it doesn't end there, does it? We have security now for our computers, firewalls, whatever they are, and other security measures to protect your personal information. When you're online, your bank card has a little chip and PIN thing to make sure that nobody else can use your bank account, and possibly you can't use your bank account if you've forgotten your number. There are armoured vehicles parked outside banks. Often, I was in NatWest the other day, and there he was in his bulletproof whatever, dropping off a few one-penny pieces. I'm sure he had something a bit more than that in there as well, but maybe they locked the doors when they're dealing with the big numbers. We have front doors, don't we, now, with special locks that have all these fastening systems to make them as secure as possible. And it doesn't end there. We have life insurance policies, so the banks aren't shortchanged, but also to ensure that your loved ones are looked after and are secure if you die unexpectedly. Helmets are used when riding bikes. Seatbelts are worn when driving cars. Tests on various appliances to make sure we're safe and to make sure that we are secure. Security is something we all think about. And some of us in this room, there's probably a whole wealth of differences amongst us. Some of us are probably way more security conscious than others, but everyone thinks about it to some extent. And that's normal and that's right. But it can cross a dangerous line. See, common sense and being wise can become obsession. It can turn into total anxiety and worry. But that shouldn't be for the Christian. Because the Christian is the only person, the only people, who can boast confidently in total security. And that security, although mainly in the future, should give us confidence today. At the moment, as you know, we're looking at the book of Isaiah. And last time we looked at a whole big chunk all at once. You might just wish to turn back. We saw some different oracles that were spoken. In fact, we saw five oracles, and they began in verse, we keep flicking back far enough, in chapter 13, we saw an oracle concerning Babylon, and that continued right through the chapters, and we saw these five oracles specifically addressed to different nations, and they go right through until the end of chapter 20. That's the section we looked at, and God's judgment was on different people, different nations, because of particular sins, and numerous things were addressed. We saw that some people were guilty of arrogance, others of gloating, others of pride, others of self-reliance, others of idolatry. So that was one block of five oracles, and that was Isaiah speaking into the present situation and what was going to happen in the not-too-distant future. Then there is another block of five oracles that you will see in chapter 21 through to chapter 23. These are no longer, some are specifically to a specific group of people, but some are a bit more cryptic, an oracle concerning the desert by the sea. And if we looked at those oracles, which we're not going to, we would see the similar themes coming through that we saw in the first five oracles. If we looked at those in depth, we would see destruction for those who are arrogant. We would see the need for patience for God's people in a dark world, a hostile world. We would see nations, Gentile nations, those outside of the kingdom of God, trying to find security, but failing. We would also see Jerusalem seeking security through self-sufficiency, but again, also failing. And yet we would see in those oracles that God still has his people, a people for himself and for his own glory. And one of the things that's come out when I've been looking at those different chapters in Isaiah is this clear message time after time. And the message is, if you want true security, that only comes from trusting God. See, that's the big tension or the big battle, if you like, that we see through Isaiah. Will I rely on myself? Will I go down the self-sufficiency route? Or will I trust the one who is seated on the throne that we see in chapter 6? And ultimately, only those who trust the God on the throne in chapter 6 have any security. Those who humble themselves now and admit that they can't do it themselves, those are the one who actually have safety for the future. We are now in another block. And although these aren't specific oracles, this is another block that really relays to us the same themes that have already been mentioned in the previous two sets of five oracles. Although the difference is this time Isaiah, in this section, following on from chapter 24 onwards, Isaiah is looking further into the future. Isaiah is looking into a future which hasn't yet happened. Excuse me. The end of things as we know them. And what we're going to do tonight, very simply, is we're going to look at Isaiah 26. We'll also move back a little bit into Isaiah chapter 24. And we're going to compare two different cities. The city was mentioned in chapter 26 and verse 1, one of the cities, the city of salvation. And also, we're also going to look also at the city of ruin. So we're going to compare those two cities, and then we're going to see what the citizens of those cities are like. So let's start by comparing the cities. And we see partial details in chapter 26 about the city of ruins. You'll see in verse 5 in chapter 26, the chapter that we read. I'm going to read verse 5 to you. He humbles those who dwell on high. He lays the lofty city low. He levels it to the ground and casts it down to the dust. Now, obviously, very clearly, this is a city of total ruin. The clue is in the name, isn't it? You know, it's a city of disaster. It's a city that has been trampled down, you'll see in verse 6, a city that is just now dust. This is a city with no future, a city of disaster. And did you notice when I was reading verse 5 that this is a complete reversal? It's a complete reversal because this city is described as a city who dwelt on high. It's described as a lofty city. So this lofty city where people dwell on high. Now, of course, like always, when reading through Isaiah, we should have Isaiah chapter 6 in our minds. And in Isaiah chapter 6, we see God who is lofty, God who is on high, God who is seated on the highest throne, who will not share his glory with another, God alone who is almighty. We should have that image in our mind as we then think about this city that's setting itself up as a lofty city, a proud city. This city apparently that just has everything going for it, but it will be brought low. Now just think about this city for a few moments, especially in connection with security. This city has no long-term future. There is no security in being lofty. Now this is a massive lesson we must learn. There is no security in being the biggest, being the strongest, being the richest, being the best armed, being the most intelligent. Those things do not give you security. See, this city that was all those things, this lofty city, has become a city of ruins. Do you remember the Titanic? How can you forget it? It was named the unsinkable ship. Now, there are claims, I'm not sure how true, these are probably apocryphal tales, but it's said that the captain said, even God himself couldn't sink this ship. Now, that might be apocryphal, not sure if it's true or not, but the illustration of the Titanic is just too good, isn't it? Because that's exactly what we see here in the book of Isaiah. See, this great ship, this majestic ship, this lofty ship, but yet heading to disaster. And that's a great picture of this city. Lofty, exalted, but heading for total disaster. And to see the total extent of the disaster faced by this city, we need to turn back. We could look in chapter 25. We could look there, chapter 25, verse 12. He will bring down your high fortified walls and lay them low. He will bring them down to the ground, to the very dust. But if we move back to Isaiah chapter 24, we get a really clear picture of the disaster that is going to come on this city. I'm going to read the first 12 verses. It's quite a long reading, but it really just helps us to picture what it's going to be like for those who are part of this city. See, the Lord is going to lay waste the earth and devastate it. He will ruin its face and scatter its inhabitants. It will be the same for priest as for people, for master as for servant, for mistress as for maid, for seller as for buyer, for borrower as for lender, for debtor as for creditor. The earth will be completely laid waste and totally plundered. The Lord has spoken this word. The earth dries up and withers. The world languishes and withers. The exalted of the earth languish. The earth is defiled by its people. They have disobeyed the laws, violated the statutes, and broken the everlasting covenant. Therefore, a curse consumes the earth. Its people must bear their guilt. Therefore, earth's inhabitants are burned up, and very few are left. The new wine dries up, and the wine withers. All the merrymakers groan. The gaiety of the tambourines is stilled. The noise of the revelers has stopped. The joyful harp is silent. No longer do they drink wine with a song. The beer is bitter to its drinkers. The ruined city lies desolate. The entrance to every house is barred. In the streets they cry out for wine. All joy turns to gloom. All gaiety is banished from the earth. The city is left in ruins. Its gate is battered to pieces. What's been spelt out there? Isn't it clear? Utter misery. Everyone who is part of this city, just misery. Did you notice in verse 2, just the scope of it, the religious and non-religious, those who are leaders and those who are servants, those who are buying and selling, the rich and the poor, those who are in debt and those who are solvent. It's total destruction for all who are in that city. Not a nice picture to paint, is it, that the prophet is telling us about. But let's compare that now, back in chapter 26, to the city of salvation. Verse 1, in that day this song will be sung in the land of Judah. We have a strong city. God makes salvation its walls and ramparts. I think that's an interesting terminology, interesting picture language. Ramparts simply mean encircling walls. Now, what does a wall do? What do walls do? Well, they keep us warm, don't they? That's one thing walls do, granted. But walls are there for security. I mean, you ask the people of Jericho, what happens when your walls fall down? See, without walls, you are vulnerable. I mean, imagine tonight, do an experiment if you like, if you want to prove this. Take all your possessions and leave them on the front garden overnight. You know, if you don't think walls matter, don't think walls are important. Where are they safer, out there or in the house? Of course they're safer in the house. Why? Because unless someone turns up with a wrecking ball, the only way in is through the window or through the door, which of course are securely fastened throughout the night. So walls speak of security, speak of safety, permanence. Now what walls are keeping the citizens of the city of salvation safe? Well, again, the clue's in the name. We have a strong city. God makes salvation its walls and ramparts. So God's salvation are the walls to this city. Of course, it's picture language, but the security of this eternal city and those who are part of it is God's salvation, God's rescue. Isn't that reassuring? The security of those inside the city isn't good works, isn't righteous deeds, isn't their love for God, it's not intellect, it's not their strength, it's not their power or their weaponry. The safety is in what God has done. And that's why it's such a secure city. Because it's secured by the one who is seated on the throne, the one who is lofty, who is worshipped by countless angels, the one who is powerful and mighty. To know a little more about this city of salvation, we need to go back to chapter 25. Now, the picture language in chapter 25 is of a mountain instead of a city, but just look at some of these great verses. Verse 6. On this mountain, the Lord Almighty will prepare a feast of rich food for all peoples, a banquet of aged wine, the best of meats, and the finest of wines. Now jump forward to verse 8. He will swallow up death forever. The sovereign Lord will wipe away the tears from all faces. He will remove the disgrace of his people from all the earth. The Lord has spoken. Now this city, just try and picture, the city of salvation is one of total joy and total security. Now that is a huge contrast from a city of ruins. Now please for a moment just reflect on what you've heard, because these aren't words on a page, these aren't abstract concepts, these two very real places reveal to us the eternal state of humanity. So these are realities for every man, woman, boy and girl. These are realities for every mum, dad, granddad, grandma, son, daughter, cousin, auntie, uncle. Everyone will be in one of those two realities. Picture the people you know. Picture them. Let their faces go through your mind. See, it's these people, people in this room, all of us, are going to be in one of these two cities. This isn't just theory. This matters. Because this is eternity. Forever and ever. Who would want anybody to go to that city of ruin? A city of dust, a city of destruction, a city of hopelessness. Compared to this city of salvation. Let's move on and think about the citizens of these cities. Let's think about the citizens of the city of ruin. I think one of the things that chapter 26 tells us about these citizens is they are simply unresponsive. We see this in verse 10. See, verse 10 tells us how God has his witnesses. God has shown kindness to people, but yet they reject him and refuse to learn from God and everything he's trying to teach them. So verse 10, though grace is shown to the wicked, they do not learn righteousness. Even in a land of uprightness, they go on doing evil and regard not the majesty of the Lord. What is that verse telling us? That verse is telling us a couple of things. It's telling us that God has shown kindness even to the wicked, and also God has placed godly people around these wicked people as witnesses to himself. But as a result, they have not learnt righteousness. They've turned away from God. So how is God, firstly, how is God gracious to the wicked? Well, last Sunday, it was our harvest services, and in the evening service, I read some words from the book of Acts, and they're very fitting for us tonight. This was Paul speaking. He said, God who made heaven and earth and sea and everything in them, in the past, he let all nations go their own way. Yet, he has not left himself without a testimony. He has shown kindness by giving you rain from heaven and crops in their seasons. He provides you with plenty of food and fills your hearts with joy. Now, companies work really, really, really hard, don't they, to get their brand in your mind. I don't know if you've ever played the logo quiz game where you see a logo and you've got to try and identify the company you associate that brand, that logo with. And of course, a good brand is one, as soon as you see it, you recognise it. So, you know, the Golden Arches doesn't stand for Michael, it's McDonald's, isn't it? And, you know, the Audi logo, all these logos stick very much in our minds. Well, God has got his witness. And he's got the best marketing campaign going, if you like, because everything he has made is telling us about him. And that's not just the food we eat, it's not just the sunset, it's not just the seasons. God made humankind as the pinnacle of his creation. We were made in his image. We are the biggest testimony going to a creator God and what God is like. But what do the wicked people do? Though grace is shown to them, they do not learn righteousness. Think about some atheists, the militant ones. What do? Well, they use the lips that God has created and given them to speak their hatred of God. The intellectual atheists, what do? They use the brain that God has given them to write books saying why they don't believe in God and why any belief in God is bad for the human race. What about those who don't claim to be atheists? Well, they use their lives often not for God, but simply for themselves, with no thought for God. See, though grace is shown to the wicked, they do not learn righteousness. See, God's grace has been extended each and every day to everybody right across the planet. But people don't learn. I mean, does your next unbelieving next-door neighbour, do they look at the beauty of a sunset and say, I must find out what my Maker wants me to do in my life? No. People don't do that. They're unresponsive. But what's more, in the end of verse 10, we see that these people have been placed in a land of uprightness, but they go on doing evil. In other words, God has his witnesses. People like Isaiah. Isaiah was somebody witnessing for God, speaking for God, relaying the message of God. But again, there is no change. And everybody who is a Christian is a signpost, a witness for God, telling people that God exists, telling people that they need to take notice of their Creator. I just think about the Christians in Iraq. What a signpost they are. What a witness they are that following Jesus is worth it. People are knocking on their doors and saying, if you stay here, we're going to kill you. But unless you turn to Islam, but they keep believing, they keep trusting, despite the consequences, signposts to living for God. But even though God has his testimony, even though he has his witnesses, they do not learn righteousness. See, the citizens of the city of ruin do not respond to God's message. Result, verse 21. See, the Lord is coming out of his dwelling to punish the people of the earth for their sins. The earth will disclose the blood shed upon her. She'll conceal her slain no longer. Or verse 5 again, he humbles those who dwell on high. He lays the lofty city low. He levels it to the ground and casts it down to the dust. See, these people who swagger now, those who live and have apparent security, Isaiah says one day will be humble. But let's move on to the citizens of the other city. What do these verses tell us about the citizens of the city of salvation? Well, notice firstly, we see this in verse 2, that the gatekeepers are given instructions not to let people in from a particular people group, not a particular language, and this is unusual in the time Isaiah was writing. This city is for all people, but notice the requirement. Open the gates that the righteous nation may enter, the nation that keeps faith. So the citizens of the city of salvation, those who enjoy security, are those who have put their faith in God, and that's shown by their reliable lifestyle. They are a nation that is seen to be right. It's a big misunderstanding of the Bible to think that things operated differently in the Old Testament. To think that in the Old Testament it was all about covenant keeping, but in the New Testament it's all about faith. That's not true. In the Old Testament it was still all about faith. It's very clear if you go back to Genesis and look at the account of Adam and Eve. That relationship with God was dependent on them taking God at his word, which they refused to do, leading to the catastrophe of Genesis 3. If you move forward to Abraham in the book of Genesis, we get the famous verse quoted in the book of Romans that says, Abram believed the Lord and he credited it to him as righteousness. See, it's been a faith from the beginning and it continues to be faith. Those who are citizens of the eternal kingdom, those who have lasting security and peace and joy, the ones who the gatekeepers open the gates to are those of faith. Now look at the promise. And this is a tremendous promise in verses 3 and 4. You will keep in perfect peace him whose mind is steadfast because he trusts in you. Trust in the Lord forever, for the Lord, is the rock eternal. Those who have put their trust in God are right with him and enjoy his peace, and this faith gives them eternal security. The world so often would blur our vision of this. The world and the messages that we are bombarded with each day would rob us of our correct perception of reality. See, the reality is those who have faith in Jesus, those people have eternal peace and eternal security. And notice actually what happens to those who have faith and what they do in relation to those who are citizens of the city of ruin in verse 5 and 6. Notice, when it talks about the city being laid low, it goes on in verse 6 and says this, feet trample it down, the feet of the oppressed, the footsteps of the poor. See, the citizens of the city of salvation trample over, if you like, this high, exalted city. But notice the citizens of the city of salvation are described as oppressed and poor. And this is the reality. In our lifetime, in this world, the church is often powerless, under-resourced. And the world looks at the church and says, you don't have any power, you don't have any resources, you're not secure. But we know the reality. Because the Bible and the gospel turns the world's values on its head. I mean, we just need to look in the New Testament and think about the disciples. What a rabble they were. If you had a business, the one you would probably employ would probably be Judas. And he was the one that betrayed the Lord Jesus. All the others were uneducated men you wouldn't really want, well, with the exception of a few. But it's God who was at work through this rabble of a people, weak, powerless, uneducated, and God used them to turn the world upside down on its head. See, true security is not found in intellect, in horses or chariots, in technology, in money, in power, in weapons, in healthcare. True security is found in God, accessed by faith. Yes, we will go through life as the minority. Life will not be comfortable, but we are part of the city of salvation, and its citizens are totally secure. I wonder, have you ever watched the sequel of a film before the original? Ever done that? If you have done, when you actually get round to watching the original, there's no suspense, is there? You know, the bomb's ticking down, you're thinking, I've seen the sequel, I know he's alive and well. I know he's not getting fried by this device. Now, in the same way, we have the end of a story. We know how things are going to end. We know those who have faith are eternally secure. Does that mean we need to be security obsessed? No, we need to be wise, we need to be sensible. But we need to live in confidence that God is seated on the throne, he is ruling human history, and he's got your back. He's got your future totally secure. Now, as we close, remember this. Yes, we live in a hostile world. Yes, as Christians, we are oppressed. Yes, we might look weak and sometimes stupid, often stupid to the world. We might look like we are putting our focus on things that don't matter. We're wasting our time and our lives. But that couldn't be further from the truth. So let's live our lives differently. Not fearing the things that they fear, but being confident, knowing that we're secure because of God's salvation, the cross, the place where wicked rebels become righteous. See, the greatest act of God in history that separates the world is the cross. Many people will call it foolishness, but we know it's our eternal security. When our worlds are tough, when the road is steep, sometimes because of our own making, other times because of our circumstances, look back to the cross, then look forward and fix your eyes on the city of salvation. Live for it. Know it's your destination. You are totally secure. Amen. We will sing our final hymn, which is 924, Salvation Belongs to Our God. Just